My name is Tarek. I'm an addict. And it is time to introduce this morning's speaker. My sponsor, Ralph, speaks so highly of this man. I haven't gotten to spend a lot of time with Kent, but we got a retreat coming up in September. And him and Ralph are coming to help facilitate the weekend for us. And I'm looking forward to spending more time with him. But Ralph says he's like the seventh brother to the White family. And, I can't wait to hear what he's got in store for us this morning. I have no idea what it is. I give the speakers on here free rein to do what they want with the 45 or 50 minutes. And I don't want to take up any more time with that. I give you Kent and rock and roll.
Thanks, Tarek. That was I really enjoyed how you guys opened this up with everybody introducing themselves. I have a sponsee meeting. It's on Tuesdays. We started it right at the beginning of COVID. And so it's been going for a while now. And when things opened back up, it was a group conscience to, and it's not a registered group or anything, right? It's a sponsee thing, but it was unanimous to continue it. What has come of that is really difficult to put into words. There is a fellowship, there is a family, which is what is happening with you guys. That has, I mean, we just did it because everybody was quarantined and we couldn't get out of the house, right? So it seemed like a good idea, right? But every time I think I know something, see, that's the stuff that kills me. It's not what I don't know. It's the stuff I think I know, right? What God had in store, as always, was like a million miles beyond anything we ever could have dreamed. We've been through death of sponsees in that meeting. We've been through birth of children in that meeting. I sponsor guys around the country who didn't know each other. So now we got people, when they travel, they're getting together, they're going to meetings, they're going to conferences together around the country. We are praying for one another on a daily basis. I can't even put into words what it has done. But hearing everybody introduce themselves, it was really good for me. I heard from 1 month to up to almost 33 years. What a wonderful, and here's the thing, for all of you who are newer, I want to share this with you. What's available to the 33 is available to you. And that's happiness, joy, peace, freedom. That's not time restricted. You can have it as soon as you put into place the actions that our steps ask us to take, right? Yeah, it take a minute. I mean, I always say, well, you know, when you knew you're crazy, right? Well, listen, my sobriety date is May 18th, 1992. I'm still crazy, right? So you know, nobody gets perfect in here, as we just heard from our celebrant. And recovery is progressive. Don't get me wrong. It is progressive. More peace, more serenity, more, I call it spiritual sensitivity to how I think, act, behave, and more awareness of the needs of people around me. I think that's what progressively happens in here. But listen, the promises are not time restricted. I'm going to tell you something. I said it the other night. I was as happy at 11 months as I was at 11 years, as I was at 21 years. Wherever I am in this thing, if I'm doing the best I can to follow the direction that I've been given, I get those results. And I think our capability of doing things increases over time. you the longer you do something, the longer you practice something, the better you get at it. There was a guy that used to sit next to me at the morning meeting. His name was Al Perkins. He died when I was a year sober, and he was an attorney here in town. He had orange hair that went straight up. He used to wear black socks and sandals. He was one of these real eccentric lawyers. The guy probably had enough money to burn a wet elephant, but he used to sit next to me, and he was like 30 some years sober when I came in, which means he came in probably in the late 50s. But he used to sit next to me, and he used to say, "Kent, practice, practice, practice." And I would look at him and I would say, "Then what, Al?" He would go, "Practice, practice, practice." He said, "If you practice the piano every day, when the recital comes, you'll do great. If you never practice, you're going to struggle. Practice." But just simple stuff people used to say to me. And I remember Al Perry, he was a tremendous speaker too. He was an attorney, right? So I guess he was good for doing that in the courtroom. But it is it's a treat to be with you all this morning. I was looking forward to it. Terry told me I'd talk about whatever I want to talk about. That changed in my mind probably 50 times over the last 3 days. But I think that, and so I prayed about it, which is usually what I do when I get in my own way, right? Ask for God's will to be done and ask for God to show you what he wants you to do. Ralph White is my best friend, has been my best friend for, I don't know, 26, 27 years. And it is great to be with you guys. And I know that Ralph sponsors Tarek. I was with Ralph last weekend. We was in Tennessee doing a thing last weekend. Oh, I'm gonna say this before I start. Y'all got Ralph got Johnny H coming up for y'all. I had Johnny speak at my sponsor meeting 2 months ago. I will say this to you. Tarek already encouraged y'all to get on it. Pack the house. Get everybody you can get who can get on the call to get on it. You guys are in for a real treat, and that is all I am going to say about that. But y'all get in there and listen to Johnny this week. So what I wanted to talk about today, I am not an expert or authority on the 12 steps. I do not live the 12 steps perfectly, nor do I know anyone who has or ever will. But we practice and we get better as time goes on, right? And one of the things that we focused on Tuesday night, when we really got that thing rolling, was how much difference is there between what we know and what we do. It is easy to read books. It is easy to gain knowledge. It is easy to expand your intellect about things concerning recovery and what it consists of. It's even easier to flap my mouth about it in meetings. It's easy to do that, right? But this is a To Thine Own Self Be True program, right? So what we started asking ourselves, and I sponsor a lot of guys who are sober over 25 years, and I got a lot of brand new guys. We started asking ourselves, because here's the stuff that happens to me. I can only speak about me in recovery, is there are times when I kind of go to sleep. I may be actually like going through the motions of doing stuff, but it's easy for me to become complacent. It's easy for me to start checking off the boxes, right? And still be kind of consumed with me and what I got going on. It's a strange thing. And how it usually ends up is that when I start to look at retire at night, some things start popping up, and they start popping up on a recurring basis. And I start to ask myself, oh, by the way, as I said, my sobriety date is May 18th, 1992. My sponsor is Bob Darrell in Las Vegas. I'm a member of the Venice Group, but things start to pop up on a recurring basis. And so I start to ask myself, okay, so what's going on with this? Why is this not getting better? What am I really doing? Because I get calls every day from sponsees, and even the ones who are sober a long time, it's always the same thing. Problems that we are having during the course of the day with just like everyday life, our attitudes, our behavior, the way we treat other people, the selfishness and self-centeredness, the fear. And so we start to ask ourselves, when we look at these steps and we know that if we apply these steps as they're written, that they work, right? So when people call me, I never say to them, Tarek, I don't say, well, tell me what you've been doing, because what you just told me is what you've been doing ain't working. See, what I want to know is what aren't you doing? What aren't you doing? Because that's where we're going to find the answer. So we started to ask ourselves, even though we know this stuff, even though we all sponsor people, even though we da 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 over the years, what is it that we're not doing? Right? And a lot of it pointed us back to step 11. Now, a lot of things have happened prior to step 11, namely the first 10 steps, right? And when you look at step 10, it starts talking about we have entered the world of the spirit, right? So things are different. I've done some stuff, one, two, three, being convinced, right? Writing an inventory, talking it out, sharing it with God, myself, and another human being, looking at those defects of character, becoming willing to have them removed in step six, and humbly asking God to do so in step seven. And I started to go with six and seven today because a lot of times I think we miss something in step six, and that's that six-step prayer. If we don't have the will to do this, we ask God to help us be willing. A lot of times I find myself saying a seven-step prayer of a six-step issue. God is not going to wrestle me for something I ain't willing to be rid of. Honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness are the essentials of recovery. That means they can't be done without. And I can know something is damaging to me. I can know something is damaging to you. I can intellectually understand that and say, God, I don't want that. But if I ain't willing, it ain't going nowhere. Matter of fact, it's going to get worse. And that's why that six-step prayer is there. But then I've made a list of those who I've harmed, and I'm willing again. And there's a willingness prayer in step eight. I'm willing closes the loop to make amends to them all. That's not the ones I decide I want to or I'm going to do these. Like if I can do so, then I need to do it. And I do that in step nine. 10, I start to put these principles into practice on a daily basis throughout the day. Continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. So there's a word in that step, promptly. Promptly means right now, if you look in the dictionary. Promptly don't mean tomorrow. It don't mean 2 weeks from now. It probably don't mean when I quit being mad at you. See, I need to literally start looking at the black print on the white page in the blue book, because that's where I'm going to find out where I'm not doing. I'm going to find out what I'm not doing, right? So step 10, right? We continue to be on guard for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear when these crop up, not if. Okay, so we all know that, right? And so now we got this daily living thing going on. Then we get to 11, and 11 is what I want to talk about briefly here today. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve. So what improve means to me in the 11th step is never ending growth. It never ends. Where I live at, this is where Alcoholics Anonymous started. My grand sponsor was Neil C. In Cleveland. Neil C.'s sponsor was Bob Smith, a doctor in Akron who was co-founder of AA. That's the line I come out of, and it's real simple and it's real clear. And they didn't mess around if you didn't want to do it. They would tell you, look, we're here, right? We'll do anything we can to help you, but you got to move your feet, buddy. Recovery's in your feet. It ain't in your mouth and it ain't in your head, right? And they used to ask me, questions. I used to go to West Side Thursday, and there was guys there who got sober in 1941, 42. And they would say, Kent, did you give your boss a good day's work today? Kent, did you say please and thank you today? Kent, did you hold the door open for somebody behind you today? They wasn't asking me, Kent, did you memorize page 86 and 87? Kent, how many people you sponsoring? Kent, where are you speaking at? They didn't ask me none of that. What they were asking me is, am I living different? Recovery's in my feet. It's not in my head and it's not in my mouth. It is easy to talk about this stuff, but what are you doing? How you living, baby? That's what they was asking me. It took me a long time to figure that out. I just thought they was a bunch of nosy old men myself. Anyway, I get to step 11 and saw through prayer and meditation. And I'm not going to sit up here and do a diatribe on prayer and meditation. Here's a beautiful thing about the founders who wrote this book, is they already knew that I didn't come here from Sunday school. So they gave me prayers. See, that's the beautiful thing. You don't even have to make them up. They give them to you. How many times in this book does it say, we ask God, we ask God, we ask God? Every time it says that, that's a prayer. All the way through the book, a golden thread of prayer. So by the time I get here, I got a third step prayer active. I got prayers for resentment. I got a fear prayer. I got a prayer for relationships and sex conduct. By the time I get here, I already have a foundation of prayers. Stop and think about that, right? I'm already. So now it says prayer and meditation. And then it tells you how to get quiet, how to meditate. I'll talk about that in a minute. But there's some misconceptions out here in the meetings that I go to about steps 10 and 11. Because people out here will say stuff like, maybe you've heard this. I look at it in my 10th step at night. No, 10th step is promptly, that's during the day. There's no 10th step at night. Step 11, right, says when we retire at night, that's not, it says that it, after step 11. It doesn't say that in step 10. So let's take a look at this real quick. I'm going to go to the book for a second. Step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. Better men than we are using it constantly. Now, here we go. It works, but there's a condition. If we have the proper attitude and work at it, in other words, it works if you do it. It don't work if you know you should do it, right? So am I praying? Question number one. It would be very easy to be vague about this matter, but we believe we can make some definite valuable suggestions. Okay, now, when we retire at night, so it's still the day that I'm in. It ain't tomorrow yet. It's still the day that I'm in. And before I retire at night, it's going to ask me some questions, and they're going to look very much like the questions from the day. Now, my sponsor, Bob, calls this the safety net. Okay, the safety net. If you go to New York or maybe even Atlanta, where Tarek them at, you see those big skyscrapers downtown. Sometimes they'll be doing work, could be construction, could be cleaning crews. And on the sides of those skyscrapers, you will see scaffolding and a series of nets. And the purpose of those nets is so that when somebody is up there toward the top, and if they were to drop a squeegee or a hammer, those nets will catch it because that thing will be a missile by the time it hits the sidewalk, right? So in the course of a day, I miss stuff. I miss stuff. And sometimes I'm not even really aware of it in the moment. Sometimes I justify it. Sometimes I'd be at work and I say something to somebody that isn't right. And then I say to myself, well, this is about the 10th time, so they had it coming, right? And then I just brush past it, right? Because I don't walk on water. I don't know about the rest of y'all. But when I stop at night to review my day and I go back through it and I ask myself these questions, were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? So it's asking me some very pointed questions. And a lot of times when I get to that particular this particular activity at night, what here's what I find. Sometimes I'm finding stuff that comes up over and over. I'm finding stuff that comes up over and over. And so I become aware of it. I talk to my sponsor about it, and he'll give me some direction. One of the things that, and I mentioned work, I have a kind of a high pressure, high stakes kind of job, is that I'm a global purchaser of raw materials. I buy raw materials from literally everywhere on earth. And sometimes a supplier will disappoint me. And I don't like to be disappointed, and I don't like surprises. And so sometimes my response will not be kind and loving. And I have done that and hung up the phone and then sat there and said, oh, no. And I've called them right back and I've said to them, look, I had no right to say that to you. I apologize for that. It will not happen again. And I don't do it again to them. But sometimes, man, like my attitude towards certain people is very dismissive. My body language, and maybe some of y'all can relate to this, I'm trying not to offend anybody or anything. But if you watch me in a meeting, my body language, when certain people start talking, I start doing stuff like this, right? It's just, it's it, and you know that people notice this and it hurts them. And it hurts them. Look, I'm not trying to be that guy no more. I don't want to be that no more. Yet, I'll pray about it, I meditate about it, right? I go to work, my spiritual armor on. I get to that morning meeting at 9:30 a.m. and that person opened up their mouth and here I am. Right? Were we kind and loving toward all? I think that's the most important question in this paragraph. Because let me say this. Hey, Tarek, if you was kind and loving toward all, you had a pretty good day, didn't you? You had a pretty good day. He was kind of loving. Was I kind of loving toward all? No. When it says, were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Right? Because that's me, right? So I got to start asking myself, what are the real answers to these questions? And I need to be diligent. Look, I don't have to write it down. If you want to write it down, if that helps you, that's up to you. The book don't ask me to write it down. I'm not trying to turn this into some kind of analytical exercise. Like I say, if it helps you, do it. What it's asking me is, how am I living? And how am I treating other people? Am I living my life in accordance with what God would have me to be? Or am I, exercising self-will most of the day and running roughshod over everybody? I can do that sober, trust me. What makes this so important that I have this safety net? Because when I wake up tomorrow, I want you to stay with me for a minute. When I wake up tomorrow on awakening, I need closure on the previous day. I cannot drag yesterday into today. I cannot bring these attitudes, these resentments, all this fear into today and expect to be able to receive in meditation. You know how people always say, well, I can't meditate more than 3 minutes because, then my head starts running, right? My head starts running because I got all this unresolved stuff from yesterday still haunting me. And so God can't, there's no clarity. God can't get in because I can stay quiet for about 2 minutes and then all this stuff just starts regurgitating in my head. So what this does, what Retire at Night does for me, is it gives me clarity and closure on the day before. If I got to make an amend, I know that. If I got to talk to my sponsor about something, I know that. I've asked God's forgiveness and I've asked him to direct me to be what he had, right? So I got closure. So when I wake up in the morning and it tells me, all right, on awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. It's awful hard to do that when I'm still wrapped up in the 24 hours previous. Does that make sense to you? It's extremely hard to do that. What I'm talking about is being able to live in the day that I'm in, which is the most difficult thing that I've had to learn in my 30 plus years in recovery, is to live in the day that I'm in. I'm always off in yesterday. I'm always terrified about something in the future. I'm trying to get into, we, there's an old saying around here, so it's easy to have too many years and not enough days. And this is about today. This is about the day that I'm in. This is about being of maximum service to God and the people around me and trying to live my primary purpose today. There's the book has told us over and over again. This information is not really new in step 11, because how many times has it told you, go talk to somebody and then look for somebody you can help? Start living. Selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of the problem. Unselfishness is the root of the solution. This ain't calculus. This is pretty simple stuff. So then it tells me, go look for somebody you can help, right? So when even when I was brand new, if I had a problem, I would call my sponsor and talk to him about it. And then he would say to me, who you helping? Well, you mean who am I helping? I just got done telling you all this stuff's going on. And he would say, who are you helping? Click. And he would hang the phone up. And I would go to the detox. I would go down to the club where the new people are at and just sit and talk to somebody. See, at some point, see, I bet you most of the people on this call, except for those of you who are very new, you already know that. You already know that. Do you do it? Do you do it? My mother was dying of cancer when I came in here. And I had a very tumultuous relationship with my mother. I got sober when I was 32. And I was barred from their home. I mean, you know the deal. And I had some rough days. I would go to the hospital to see my mother, and there was a treatment center the hospital had across the parking lot, a great big old building. And I would leave my mother's room and I would go over there. And I'm talking, I'm like 30 days sober. I got, dude, I'm brand new. And I would go over there and they would let me go on the detox and talk to guys, and I would be okay when I left. I got sober under fire, and I will always be grateful for that, because it's not theory for me that what this book says works. I had to do it in order to stay sober. When I hadn't worked all 12 steps, when I hadn't made amends yet, I hadn't written an inventory yet, and I stayed sober. And I got told to do some, if you knew and you listen to me right now, to do some real specific things. The first thing is there's nobody in the rooms who doesn't have something to give. Nobody. If you got a day and some guy raises his hand and say, this is my first day, go over there and give him what you got. What do you got? Well, you could say, well, you know what? I asked that guy over there to be my sponsor. I've got a home group now. I'm gonna set up chairs at my home group. I'm gonna go to as many meetings as I can. And I'm gonna pray in the morning and ask God for help. And I'm gonna thank him at night. Okay, if that's what you was, if you give him that, he now has more than what he had. And if you're new, let me share something with you. That new guy will talk to you before he'll talk to me, because you're closer to where he is than I am. When I was new, they told me, if you can't carry the message to the alcoholic, you can carry the alcoholic to the message. I used to load my car up with other new guys, and there's 2,000 meetings a week in Cleveland. There's another 1,000 some in Toledo, though I'm an hour away from both of those cities. I live in There's probably more meetings in this concentrated area where I live than there is anywhere in the world. And it should be, because it started here. We would go everywhere, man. We was crazy. We'd go everywhere. I would put all these new guys in the car. Listen, we talked about recovery on the way there. We didn't really know what he was talking about, but we did it. we went to the meeting, and then we talked about the meeting. Mostly we talked about the people at the meeting, right, on the way home. But we was in there, man, right? Listen, I'm going to share something with you. The sooner you start living the opposite of the problem, the sooner you will start getting better. Selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of the problem. Unselfishness is the root of the solution. The sooner I start to give in here, and don't ever let anybody tell you you ain't got nothing to give if you've stayed sober today and you're doing the best you can with what you've been given, the sooner you start to give, the sooner your life is going to start to change. It's that simple. My sponsor told me, go to work. I worked at Ford Motor Company. He said, you go to work. He said, I want you to get that man 9 hours pay. I mean, 9 hours work for 8 hours pay. I said, we call that brown nosing where I work at. I said, I'm not doing that. He said, do what I told you, right? And so I did. And I started to, when I got done, I'd clean up. I'd go help other people finish up their stuff. I started living differently. I started living differently, right? So in step 11, we'll come back there. Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time, or would we be thinking of what we could do for others, of what we could pack into the stream of life? But we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, because it said we constructively review our day. And constructively is not destructively. I'm not reviewing my day and say I'm still a piece of crap. I ain't never going to be nothing. Look, I already know by step 11 I'm a human being and I ain't going to never be perfect, right? But what I want to do is I want to be honest. I want to take an honest look at what's going on. And then it tells me we don't drift into worry or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. After making our review, here we go. Here's a prayer. We ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. So, okay, so here's what we discovered on the Tuesday night on my group. We all knew this. We all talked this to sponsees, and we were spotty with it at best. At best. And at times, very mechanical and robotical about it, right? Checking a box. And so we decided to really start to emphasize this. To really, 10 and 11, being diligent during the day about cleaning up messes, talking about what was going on, whatever we needed to do. Making sure that I retire at night. We were addressing anything from the day. And then getting up in the morning with a clean slate for which God can work with. And I'm going to tell you, I wish you could hear the sharing in that meeting when we really started to challenge ourselves to do this. One of the great things about sponsoring people is you get a front row seat to what God does in their lives. And I know the people that I sponsor, and I sponsor a lot of people, and I know them, and I've known most of them since they were brand new. And to hear the sharing, the increase, I'm gonna say it like this, the increase in spiritual awareness of what's going on around them, how they are reacting to life and to situations and other people. And some of these situations include, you know, serious illness, divorces, children who are addicted. Recovery is experiential. It's not theoretical. You don't get it out of a book. It is experiential. And when I was talking at the very beginning about, you know, what has happened out of that meeting, I mean, it's just been astonishing. And it's been astonishing for me. It's like, I ain't no guru or nothing. I don't do this stuff perfect. And that's one of the great things about sponsoring people, right? Is it keeps you in front of you. right? When you got some guy with 9 months sitting in front of you telling you, you ain't gonna believe what I said today. And he tells you, and you say, hell, I said that yesterday, right? It keeps me in front of me. And it keeps me connected to the work. But more important, the evidence of God's grace in other people's lives is right in front of you. It's right in front of you. And my faith in this power, my faith in this way of life continues to grow and be strengthened. My mother was a woman of great faith. I used to think, how do you get that? Like some people are born with it and some people ain't got it, right? It's like when I came, I was like, that can't happen for me because I thought I knew about it and I thought I had tried to do it. I had done nothing. I wouldn't sat in church when I before I went to jail, hoping my mother didn't give me some money for a decent lawyer. That was the extent of my spiritual seeking. And there were times I prayed. And I believe those prayers were answered. I believe that's why I'm here today. God doesn't answer prayers always the way that I think he's going to, or in the way that I think he's going to. So I do believe that those prayers I said, those foxhole prayers, I believe they were answered. But listen, how do you this faith thing? Listen, move your feet in here. If I move my feet in here and I do the things that I'm asked to do, all of a sudden, man, there's no question in my mind. We did an exercise in step 11 where we, you know how God does all this stuff for us and we go to meetings and talk about it, but as soon as something scary happens, we will revert right back to self. Like just say you scared about your job, maybe where you work might close or something, or you might hear a rumor or something like that. All of a sudden, right? I forget that God has done all this in my life, right? Over and over, the longer you hear, I mean, there's absolutely no, but in the moment, in the day that I'm in, when fear crops up, right? What do I do? What do I do? And here's what I have found, that in the day, we did an exercise, okay? And this is what it was. In your quiet time, in your meditation time, reflect on God's grace in your life before you came to recovery, when you came to recovery, and since you've been here. Stop and reflect on that. You're looking at a man who I hit the pipe in 1984, had a heart attack and died. Yet I'm sitting before you. I've been cut out of cars. I've been shot at. Yet I'm sitting here before you. I walked out of a bar on May 16th of 1992. And I had a moment of clarity. And there was a guy that used to say, that's the moment when God paralyzes the liar in you long enough for you to see the truth. And I know that that was the result of prayer because it wasn't something I had been contemplating. But I walked out of that bar and my head cleared up. And this is what I saw. I can't live like this no more. 20 years of this crap. And I'm dying. I was 32 years old. I had a liver that was distended about 7 inches. I couldn't even fasten my pants in the front. And I'm sitting in a car with a 40-ounce of Old English 800 on the floor and a crack pipe in my hand. And dude, I can't live like this no more. And I know that came from God. Since I've been here, I buried both of my parents. Job problems, financial problems. Got divorced in here 20 years. So, dude, God has cared. My life today is better than I ever could have dreamed. There is nothing in front of me that's greater than the power that's behind me. Listen, life gonna show up in your life. That's life. Right? It's some Ralph say all the time, God don't give me more than I can handle, but sometimes life do. And that's why I need God. So my relationship with God is the most important relationship in my life, and I can't spend time in the morning on that. We run around talking about the grace of God and going to meetings, and God is so good to me and he done so much, but I can't spend time to do this in the morning. I can't spend time to do this. There's a line in this book that says, remind a prospect that his recovery is not dependent upon people. It is dependent upon his relationship with God. Don't hear that one quoted every day. My recovery is not dependent upon people. It's dependent upon my relationship with God. So through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God, as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will and the power to carry it out, that's my relationship with God. Right? And then I take that, all these things, and I put some feet on them in step 12. But we start helping people as soon as we get here, right? But step 12 is pointed into carrying this message and helping others, you know, doing it in all our affairs. But it's awful hard to do that when I'm so full of me, I can't see you. And that's where 10 and 11 come in, right? So on awakening, thinking about the 24 hours ahead, we ask God to direct our thinking. There's the first prayer of the day. Specifically asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, and self-seeking motives. Do I say that prayer every morning? I know it's in here. I've sponsored 1,000 people since I've been here. I've been through it with every one of them. Do I do it? Do I do it? Okay. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is clear to wrong motives, okay? So the problem of the alcoholic lies in his mind rather than in his body, and it tells me how my thought life can be placed on a higher plane, and it's by clearing it of wrong motives. How do I do that? By using prayer and meditation to align my will with God's will. And it's not going to be 24/7. I show up in my own life every day. The human ego is very resilient. But I'll tell you, when we started really focusing on this and I started really putting it into practice in my life, my reactions to life, my reactions to people, the peace and serenity, the assurance or faith that they talk about in this book, really started to, I'll just put it like this, it wasn't like I didn't have none, but it really started to increase. There's a promise that said we lose our fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter we were reborn. And that starts to happen. That starts to happen. I start to live in this assurance that God has got my back. We say that all the time. God got me. God got you, right? No, for real. God got me. God got my kids. God got my girlfriend. God has got me. I don't have to worry about where it's going to come from. The presence of God is the most important thing in my life, period. Because without that, I ain't got nothing. And I'm a guy who, I'm a fear-driven guy, like I think most people are. The antidote for fear is faith. And this is how I build it. And thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for intuitive, so another prayer, we ask God for inspiration, intuitive thought, or a decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. This is how I meditate. We're often surprised how the right answers will come after we have tried this for a while. Have I tried it for a while? It doesn't tell you how long a while is, but this thing is progressive. I have to practice it in order for it to start happening. It says, what used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. What that means, this is going to take some time. I think a lot of people give this a shot, nothing, they think nothing happened, and they, well, you know, I don't really do that. I don't really, right? And what am I doing? I'm shortchanging my recovery and the most important relationship in my life. It tells you gradually over time, right? Consistent and persistent effort is what we talk about in our meeting, becoming consistent and persistent with this. It's one of them things where though I can't realize this until I do it, you know. Ralph always say, you can't describe the taste of peanut butter to somebody who ain't never had peanut butter in their mouth. And I think that's a pretty good way to put it. I have to do it. And that's what I started finding out 20 some years sober, is that even though I was taking a shot at this, I was not diligently putting this into action in my life the way that I was supposed to. And the results have been really, well, it's a spiritual thing, so I don't have words to describe it. I guess I just have to do it. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking as time passes will be more and more on the plane of inspiration. As time passes, it said that again. We come to rely upon it. So we use the concluded period of meditation with another prayer. We got about five of them in the last two paragraphs, huh? That we be shown all through the day what our next step is to be, that we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. We ask especially for freedom from self-will and are careful not to make any requests for ourselves only. We may ask for ourselves, however, if others will be helped. We are careful never to pray for our own selfish ends. Many of us have done that for a long time and it don't work. Okay. So it concludes with a prayer. So here was the question we asked ourselves on Tuesday night. Do we do this? Do we do this? We challenged each other. I'm not talking about just the new guys. I'm talking to 25, 30. We challenged, do you really do this? And the answer pretty much was no. I love the honesty. Okay, so let's do it. Let's make it. Let's do it. Let's make a commitment. Let's do this every day, and then let's come back in 2 weeks. We won't talk about it next week, but in 2 weeks, let's share about what's happening. And the sharing was mind-blowing. It was mind-boggling, right? So that was what I wanted to talk to y'all about. And again, like sometimes you get too many years and not enough days, and you kind of just start going to sleep with some of this stuff. You know it, you regurgitate it, right? And what I'm doing is I'm missing the boat, man. Like I'm missing the gift. I'm shortchanging my own recovery. And I'm going to tell you something, how I look at that. If I shortchange my own recovery, I shortchange the people around me, because they don't get the Kent that God wants them to have. And I have self-will, and God is not going to come down here and beat me over the head to get me to do what I'm supposed to do. Honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness are essential. And that's what I got to bring to the table. So, Tarek, I want to thank you for having me here. It's been an honor and a privilege. You guys have a great group here. It's really cool to see what I saw here this morning, and I thank you. And Tarek, I'll see you in a few months. All right, that's it.
Wow. Thank you so much. There were so many things that were said throughout the talk. The practice, you know, in our family, we talk about if you practice today, you win. If you're lazy and you don't practice, you lose. A very simple rule to follow. He mentioned a valuable question that we should all reflect on, which is, what aren't we doing? There are things that I emphasize: the prayer, the meditation, the contemplation of spiritual readings, but then spending time in a community that includes other travelers on the spiritual path that is based on the intimate self-disclosure of what I am experiencing in my life. So not only do I do the self-examination, he talked about the conversations with other humans and like how are we living. We gain insights into our own life through examining each other's lives. And then in 6 and 7, he talked about the willingness. Things become objectionable. Are we entirely ready? You know, and sometimes we glance over that 6th step and move into the 7th step, and we don't look at that consideration. And then the most important question, I believe, and I loved it, you know, how am I living differently? You know, and that question is only answered if we have a group of closed mouth friends around us where we can exchange dialogue with each other about what it's like to live a spiritual basis of life. And then through that, the bonding that takes place and the increased levels of awareness about ourselves through the community that we're in, along with all of the other practices of prayer, meditation, contemplation, the sharing with one another, what ends up happening is our character refines itself over time. And so when we go and tell our story, the person telling the story is not the person in the story. And those are significant experiences when you start to realize that. You're like, wow. So Kent, thank you so much, sir, for spending your Sunday morning with us and taking us to church. It was incredible. Thank you. Thank you. Can't wait to spend some time with you in September at the retreat. Guys, we're going to take a few moments of silence to close this meeting. We always stay on for another 10 or 15 minutes. I love all of you. I hope I talk to some of you throughout the course of the day. That's it. Thank you. Have a wonderful Sunday, everybody.